The terrible acts of terrorist violence, both before and after the 9/11 attacks on the United States, and the consequent cycle of horrific counterstrikes requires engaged citizens to give renewed consideration to the current state of global conflict and to participate in this public debate about disinformation. In order to make sense of global dynamics that bring fear, death, and destruction home to roost, we are dependent upon a plethora of information that's by nature framed in some way by the news gatherers. The presentation of information about terrorism regularly depicts an us versus them scenario in which religions, cultures, and ethnic groups associated in any way with terrorism are presented as alien and fearsome. We see the formation of an enemy image being developed in public discourse that presents us with a set of profoundly negative representations that serve to legitimize violent counter-responses and justify the expansion of this violence to innocent civilians not associated with the political, military, or insurgent leaders responsible for the acts of terror. In my presentation, I document the nature of the enemy image that is currently present in public discourse regarding the war on terrorism in Afghanistan and in Iraq. I identify the predominance of animal metaphors in mainstream media accounts of the war on terrorism, and I argue that these representations are dehumanizing, that they may increase backlash against those at home and abroad, and ultimately they may increase the possibility of genocide. The expansion of the global communication system has made the media the primary source for information about the world events for many people, including policymakers and the public. Yet while the culture of contemporary journalism claims that the modern news media produces an objective, truthful, and neutral account of events, we have identified at this conference the processes by which subjective decisions, suffused with judgments based on values, are constant and inevitable in the media world. We use the term manufacture of news to communicate the constructed nature of the news business that involves a myriad of judgment calls regarding the order and placement of stories, selection of sources, use of language and tone of headlines. In addition, we know journalists also have to contend with outside factors that affect the presentation of the news. Advertisers, powerful corporations with vested interests, governments, and media owners all can act to shape the news. As a result, the mainstream for-profit news media frequently distorts the information that's presented, so that instead of a well-researched, balanced account of the situation that addresses multiple perspectives and is presented using careful selection of language and terminology, we get instead a superficial, one-sided account that bangs the drums of war and is something closer to propaganda than to journalism. Through the way the media frame terrorist news, through the selection of some facts out of a multitude of potentially relevant facts, through the associations that lie between the terrorist act and the social context, the media can have a profound influence that can create public hysteria and witch hunts, reactions that serve political interests, not only those of the terrorists. Edward Herman noted that in the 17th century, Daniel Defoe reported that there were 100,000 stout country fellows ready to fight to the death against popery without knowing whether popery was a man or a horse. And that in our day, there are millions of stout-hearted fellows ready to fight to the death against terrorism without knowing whether terrorism is a man or a horse. Since 2001, I've observed a pattern of dehumanizing animal metaphors in the media coverage on the war on terrorism. The reporters refer to the 9/11 terrorists, combatants in Afghanistan, and later to Iraqi soldiers using animalistic language, such as hunting for Osama bin Laden, inside the terrorist's lair, and the rats are in the trap. I undertook an examination of these metaphors using the LexisNexis media database that many of you will know contains thousands of worldwide print publications. The search involved looking for animal metaphors in conjunction with news coverage of the war on terrorism. Although these metaphors are prevalent widely in public discourse, I limited my data to clearly journalistic news articles as opposed to op-ed pieces, commentaries, or letters to the editor, because I was interested in the prevalence of the enemy image in ostensibly objective news accounts. While the animal metaphors discovered in my research were prevalent throughout the newspaper coverage, the results presented here are limited to newspaper headlines. Headlines are the most read part of the paper, and many people read or scan nearly all of the headlines in a newspaper. The headline, which is meant to summarize the content of the news article, can present many bias and prejudices. The use of animal metaphors on the subject of the war on terrorism was evident in a multitude of publications. Politicians frequently included the terms in the rhetoric of their public pronouncements, and letters to the editor continued this use in public discourse. Mainstream media publications universally referred to the hunt for weapons and or terrorists, but the use of specific animal metaphors tended to be a feature of more sensational news publications. The New York Post, which is infamous for its eye-catching and dramatic headlines, such as "See ya later, Al-Qaeda," "Al-Qaeda gets Al-Clobbered," and "Hey Saddam, we're coming to get you," was the most frequent user of the animal metaphors in my research, but other better respected newspapers were also users of the terms. My results revealed clear evidence of the use of terms that implied the pursuit and capture of an animal, such as hunt, trap, nest, and lair. I found hundreds of references to the hunt for terrorists and UN weapons hunt in Iraq. Some sample headlines from my research include "Hunt and kill, US plans quick strike on Saddam. Bin Laden is trapped. Massachusetts eyed as key nest for Osama's thugs. Bunker busts ace in hole. Powerful bombs could penetrate 30 meters to target terrorists in underground lairs, in the lair of the terrorist." The use of animal-oriented language in newspaper headlines, such as the hunt for weapons, in place of a less ideologically loaded term, such as the search for weapons, sets the stage for the representation of the protagonists in the news account to be identified as less than human, as animals to be captured and disposed of. This sense is reinforced when the media portray terrorists as hiding in animal habitats, such as lairs or nests, instead of human-constructed hideouts, bunkers, or training camps. The most common animal metaphors in the media were rats and snakes. Rats are seen in multiple cultures as synonymous with destruction and disease and as carriers of plague. The symbol of the rat is also associated with untrustworthiness in the sense of being sneaky or an informer. A dictionary of symbolism lists the common Eastern and Western cultural associations of the rat as unclean, rummages in the bowels of the earth, has distinctly phallic and anal connotations, and is associated with notions of wealth and money, often associated with images of avarice and greed and of sinister and shady activities. I found many examples of the rat metaphor in news articles. Some sample headlines are, "The rats are in the trap," "Raid zaps Iraqi rat," "US captures Hussein's half-brother," "GIs hunting king rats in tunnel mazes," "Troops grab 50 and raid on Afghan's rat's nest," "Our spies close in on evil rat holes." The media's labeling of suspected terrorists, enemy soldiers, and relatives of military and political leaders as rats calls upon the common cultural associations of these animals as untrustworthy, disease-bearing, and as vermin whose capture and extermination becomes justified. The second significant animal metaphor was the snake, with specific reference to the viper. In Western culture, the serpent is most commonly used as a symbol of evil and the evil spirit. Although the snake is a positive image of a healer and medicine in many other cultures, the serpent finds a place in modern and classical design as the traditional Christian typification of the forces of evil. It is shown in opposition to and vanquished by the forces of good in the sense of Christianity triumphing over the forces of evil. Interestingly enough, the snake's malignant role is most strikingly depicted in conjunction with the eagle, the latter representing lightness or good overcoming darkness or evil. This image was employed in Homer's Iliad, in which an eagle carrying in its talons a bleeding snake appeared before the Greek heroes and was seen as an omen of their success over the Trojans. Vipers also have an interesting symbolic history in that young vipers gnawing through the belly of their mother symbolized children plotting against their parents. In the 16th century, the viper signified a common woman or harlot lying in the way to sting men with a contagion of her wantonness and lust. Sample headlines from my research include "Brave Brit Raid Smashes Viper's Nest," "US Report Calls for War on Principal Nest of Terrorist Vipers," "Port City of 14 million harbors viper's nest of terrorism. The viper awaits." The imagery of the snake, and specifically the viper, communicates a sense that our opponents have an instinctive drive to strike and poison us. When confronted with an aroused and lethal snake, responding with a deadly counterattack becomes the most valid and most rational response. The final animal metaphor determined to be examined here is the weasel. Weasel has been the symbol used in the North American media to label the opponents of the Bush administration's war on Iraq. In symbolic analysis, although the weasel was credited with the ability to kill basilisks and possess the knowledge of the herb of life, it has had an unsavory reputation in almost every country since early times. It was the symbol of a young woman, usually a bad one, and was basically associated with trickery. A weasel may become a beautiful girl in order to marry, but at the wedding feast, she reverts to her animal nature and pursues a mouse. Even in modern folklore, the sight of a weasel foretells misfortune, although disaster can sometimes be averted by throwing stones or making the sign of the cross. Sample headlines from my research include, "It's showdown time at the UN as Powell takes on the Euro weasels." "Axis of weasel, Germany and France wimp out on Iraq." The use of the term weasel by American politicians and the media to label the leaders of Western countries who oppose the war on terrorism communicates a sense that they have backed out or weaseled out of their foreign policy obligations to their usual allies. The U.S. presents itself as betrayed by those they thought they could count on, and the classical cultural connotations of the weasel is used to imply a lack of integrity on the part of these leaders and the populace they presumably democratically represent. The U.S. news media has a long history of using animal metaphors to represent minority groups inside its own country and abroad. Historically, Aboriginal peoples and African Americans were portrayed as more akin to animals than human beings, thus helping to justify their enslavement and legal status as chattel. During World War II, the Japanese were reduced to bestial subhuman levels by the media, military, and the American public. The Japanese were often described as rats, snakes, and cockroaches, and confined to internment camps that were often actually stables. A popular poster in American West Coast restaurants during World War II proclaimed, "This restaurant poisons Japs and rats." The Nation magazine ran a story in 1945 describing a Japanese soldier's death on Iwo Jima as a rat's death, defiant in a corner until all else fails. In Vietnam, the massacre by American soldiers of as many as 500 unarmed civilians in the My Lai massacre was justified by their commander, Lieutenant William Calley, as the equivalent of killing animals. Racist epithets such as cockroaches, sand niggers, camel jockeys, and other dehumanizing terms were used to describe the Iraqis during the first Gulf War, while their slaughter was described in hunting terms as a turkey shoot, shooting fish in a barrel, or clubbing seals. Keller notes that pilots flying over groups of Iraqi troops reported they ran like ants when the bombs were dropped on them, and it's like someone turned on the kitchen light late at night and the cockroaches started scurrying. We finally got them out where we can find them and kill them. In a more recent analysis of metaphorical language in the Los Angeles Times coverage of Latinos, Otto Santa Anna noted that the dominant metaphor for immigrants was animals, including references to the immigrants being hunted out, baited, lured, and ferreted out. In all, the theme, which the author just characterized as overtly racist and dehumanizing, surfaced in nearly one-third of all allusions to immigrants from the period 1992 to 1994. Dehumanizing individuals or groups can make them legitimate targets for violence and doesn't support attempts at negotiated solutions. If we see our opponents as less than human and akin to vermin or parasites, it becomes ludicrous to imagine sitting down and talking to them at a negotiating table or trying them for war crimes at an international court of human rights. The language of dehumanization can also serve to legitimize the practice of oppression and even genocide. A disturbing column by Ann Coulter, which appeared in the National Review shortly after 9/11, recommends a horrifying counterattack. She says, quote, "This is no time to be precious about locating the exact individuals directly involved in this particular terrorist attack. We should invade their countries, kill their leaders, and convert them to Christianity. We weren't punctilious about locating and punishing only Hitler and his top officers. We carpet-bombed German cities. We killed civilians. That's war, and this is war." Unquote. Exterminationist rhetoric has been used by many groups in times of ethnic conflict. The Nazis created propaganda films that interspersed scenes of Jewish immigration with shots of teeming rats. Jews were compared to crossbred mongrel dogs, insects, and parasites, and statements such as, "In the case of Jews and lice, only a radical cure helps," were used to endorse an exterminationist rhetoric. This language was also evident in my research. A broad effort to eradicate terror, was a headline in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Live with terrorism or go all out to eradicate it, in the Portland, Maine Press Herald. Israeli Defense Minister vows to pursue exterminate enemies, on the BBC. I would argue that when the media and the public frame their discourse on terrorism in terms of dealing with animals instead of people, they are producing and sustaining racist attitudes towards individuals and ethnic groups. Edward Said notes that a central element of a racist orientation is to rely on stereotypes to define people by their natures instead of their actions. Quote, much of what one reads and sees in the media about Islam represents the aggression coming from Islam because that is what Islam is. Local and concrete circumstances are thus obliterated. In other words, covering Islam is a one-sided activity that obscures what we do and highlights instead what Muslims and Arabs, by their flawed nature, are. Unquote. Thus, it's important not to be complacent about disinformation of this type in any public discourse, especially the news media. Representing other people as vermin, even if those people are enemy combatants or known terrorists who have committed terrible atrocities, is a profoundly dehumanizing act that undermines the fragile construction of a civilized society. Recent events in the former Yugoslavia and in Rwanda reveal how much effort is needed to sustain a humane society and how easily it can be shattered. Thank you.